Welcome back to Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. It is great to have you with us. And it's also great to have Jean Creighton sitting across from me, as she does each month, to talk about things astronomical. Welcome, Jean.
Hello, Bonnie.
Great to see you, as always. And in the past couple of months, we've been talking about moons in our solar system. I think we talked about Saturn's moons. We've talked about Jupiter's moons. But it's been a while since we've talked about our own. And I thought that would be a wonderful thing to kind of focus a little closer to home.
Sure.
So what's going on with the moon and possibly us getting back there again and things that we've discovered?
Well, for starters, many of our listeners might not be aware that there is an orbiter going around the moon right now called the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. And the nice thing about it is that we now have a complete map of the moon, even of the side, what we call the far side, the side, in other words, that never is turned toward the Earth. But what I found interesting is that we are still learning from the lunar samples that we got 40 years ago. In six missions, so Apollo 11, 12, 14, 15, 16, 17, 381 kilograms, that's 840 pounds, were brought back from the moon to the Earth. That's over 2,000 samples. And it's mostly basalt, but there are other things of interest, too, from the ground, if you will, of the moon. Of those, 32 pounds have been used for science. 30 pounds are on long-term loans where people can display
them. So exhibits.
Okay. But most of them are in what we call the Lunar Sample Lab at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, where they try and keep them in the most pristine conditions possible so that they don't get contaminated, they don't degrade over time. What I think is really interesting is this rock today gives us new insights about how and when the moon formed, how planetary orbits, and this is particularly interesting in light of planets that we're finding around other systems, how planetary orbits evolved over time, and finally, whether and how much water there is present, which of course is of great interest to us because if there's not enough water on the moon, then the whole idea of getting people back to the moon becomes even harder to contemplate.
Right, or the idea of a colony becomes impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Go back a minute to one of the things you mentioned, which was that we're learning about planetary orbits. And how do rocks, you know, basically they're rock samples, how do they tell us about planetary orbits?
They can tell us about planetary orbits because we can look very carefully at the record on the moon from craters. So craters, for starters, give us some hints, but also the nature of rocks and how abused they look, you can conclude a continuous history of bombardment in the solar system. So we know, for example, that about 3.8 to 4.1 billion years ago, there was a massive, somewhat inexplicable heavy bombardment of the moon. The Earth would have received that too, but of course, our geological record gets washed out and eroded, unlike the moon, that it keeps it pretty pristine. So we can look at that and say, wow, what on Earth, or as it were, what in the solar system could have caused this sudden release of many, many, many objects? And now the best ideas we have are that perhaps the giant, the gas giant planets, maybe Jupiter, maybe Saturn, maybe both, moved in their orbits and caused mayhem among the asteroids. And all of a sudden, there was, you know, really a very large number of objects moving in the solar system that would have caused this heavy cratering on the moon.
We can safely say all heck broke loose.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Now, what's interesting about this is that we are looking at, we've talked about this before, we're looking at planets around other stars, and we know there are more than 2,000 of them now. We're finding a rather large number of gas planets very close to their star. So it would be like having something bigger than Jupiter closer to our sun than Mercury.
Wow.
We call these hot Jupiters, and we had no idea how this came to be. But one of the idea that was put forward is, well, maybe Jupiter-like planets formed further out and they moved closer. So this idea is perhaps reinforced from our own solar system. Maybe Jupiter and Saturn weren't quite as stable as we've always assumed their orbits to be, rock solid. Perhaps they moved.
Over time.
Over time.
Okay.
And that is, again, in sort of agreement with what we're seeing around other solar systems.
And interesting that evidence for that is on our own moon.
That's right. So that is very recent. I mean, this is a fairly recent idea about how our planets in our own solar system might have moved significantly in their orbit. The other idea I mentioned is how and when the moon formed. And we're finding that there are very similar isotopic abundances of oxygen, both on the moon and on the Earth. When I say isotopic abundances, I'll just remind people that an isotope, let's say you look at oxygen. Oxygen has a certain number of neutrons typically in its nucleus. But sometimes you'll find different flavors of oxygen. They have the same chemical mostly qualities that regular oxygen does, but they're a little heavier. So there'll be an extra neutron in their nucleus.
It turns, and those form, I'm sorry, those form naturally in
yep,
nature. Okay.
Yep. So we have all these isotopes, and each planet has its own ratio of isotopes. So for carbon, for example, carbon 12 is by far the most abundant carbon. But there is some carbon-13, for example, and the ratio of that is fixed for the Earth. If you look, say, on Mars, it's a little different, and each planet has its own signature. So if, for example, you get a rock from Mars, you look at isotopic abundance, and you realize that cannot be a rock from Earth. That has to be from Mars. That's how we know, in fact, when a rock is from Mars. So we look at the isotopic abundances of the moon and we see, that is fairly close to the Earth, which reinforces the idea that something hit the Earth and the moon is partially made of the mantle of the Earth and partially some intruder that hit the Earth and reconvened to make what we now call the moon. And it eventually got into a stable orbit around our Earth.
Do we have any idea when that happened? How many
billions of years? On the order of probably 3.5 to 4 okay. billion years ago.
So not last week.
No, not last week. Not last week.
So what else is going on with the moon?
Perhaps the most surprising thing to me was that because we have better spectrographs, we can get a better sense of how much water there is. So 40 years ago, the measurements were that there's one part in a billion, so that's one with nine zeros following it, water, one in a billion.
Not much.
Which seems kind of discouraging.
Right.
However, with our better measurements, we now understand that there's 10,000 times more water than that, which is still only, you know.
Still pretty dry.
Pretty dry, but that's significantly more.
Yeah.
Which, of course, as I said before, is encouraging in terms of our long-term plans for the moon.
Is there some idea that that water could be extracted if we were there in a colony situation?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. You always – I mean, if it's not there, there's nothing to extract.
Right.
But if there is, you can work with that.
Okay. So that's enough to extract at least some. So we wouldn't have to bring it all with us.
That's right. Because if we had to carry it all, then we can't do it. It's too expensive. So I think it's fascinating that we're learning more and more about the moon. And I guess this will continue because the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter is still there, still working, and there are more plans. India has a plan to send a mission as well. So China, there are other countries who are interested in the moon. So I'm sure we'll continue to learn more about it.
Right, and we'll be getting more pictures. I love the idea of getting the far side pictures. I mean, I know we have others, but that's just really nice to see something that we wouldn't normally see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jean, as always, it's a pleasure to see you. Thanks so much for stopping by, and we'll catch you next month.
It was my pleasure.
Lake Effect astronomy contributor Dr. Gene Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium, which is located on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She joins us each month to talk about the universe.